miracle of the Lady of Fatima. Was it really the Virgin Mary, or was it something else? Something from another world. This is Jerry Pippin, and welcome to an unusual show based upon the Fatima Trilogy, written by two Portuguese researchers, Joaquim Fernandes and Fina D'Amato. Here is how they describe this series.
What happened at Fatima, Portugal, in 1917? An apparition of Mary of Jesus, according to the Catholic Church, or a close encounter with an extraterrestrial or interdimensional being?
For the first time, we gained access to the secret documents held at the Sanctuary of Fatima. We found that official reports were manipulated. The Seer Lucia described an encounter with a luminous being, a little girl with a ball between her hands. The images seen today do not fit with this first description by Lucia.
The documents we use in our books, Heavenly Lights and Celestial Secrets, show that the events of Fatima are similar to those we define today as UFO phenomena, including a disc-like metal object flying over the crowd. That encounter also shows all the details and physiological effects we can find in modern contactee stories, where a prophetic message is given by extraterrestrial entities.
In 1917, the science gave up explaining these celestial phenomena. Today, it is possible to study the visionary experiences, including Marian apparitions like Fatima, using all the instruments of our contemporary knowledge. We read Fatima events as an outstanding moment of contact with something intelligent and superior. We ask you to take a look at facts and suspend for a moment your beliefs.
Hello, this is going to be an interesting show, not only because of the content, but because of the technical logistics involved. Our two guests, Joaquim Fernandes and Fina D'Amato, are on the line from Portugal. They do not speak English very clearly, as you could tell from the opening of the show. However, we did go ahead and ask them to record that piece to give you a flavor of their personality. That's for the English-speaking audience, naturally, because we have a Portuguese version of the show on the website as well, especially designed for the people in Portugal and Brazil and other places where Portuguese is the language. Our production editor, Jane Swartley, has her work cut out for her on the show as well. Because, you see, we want to give you a flavor of both of our guests. So what we will do is we'll include a little of their replies in Portuguese before we present the translation. And that brings us to our translator. Well known for her work in the media, journalism, and quite a writer in her own right, let's say hello to Alexandra Bruce. Alexandra is on the line from Long Island. Alexandra, welcome to the show. You live right there on the beach, don't you?
Yes, I'm in the Hamptons. By choice, I live here year-round. It's expensive, and you have to sacrifice a lot. But it's so beautiful, and the water is perfect temperature. It's like 80 degrees right now. Perfect temperature to cool off in when it's, 90 outside.
I think we need to let the audience know that there are actually all kinds of Portuguese. I mean, we're talking about dialects, accents, and the like.
We speak very different Portuguese, but the written language is almost the same. There's certain words that are totally different, but the accent is almost another language. I mean, it's very different.
Well, you've translated the second book in this series, the trilogy about the Fatima apparitions. So you're acquainted with these two already, our guest I'm talking about, at least in the written word, and I know you have talked to them frequently, many, many times, really, on the phone. So I think we'll make it just fine. Alexandra, we're playing this bumper music for you.
Olha que coisa mais linda, mais cheia de graça. Ela, menina que vem e que passa. Doce balanço, caminho do mar.
Now I realize you're a Native American, but you have spent some time in Brazil. Your mother's Brazilian. I've seen some pictures of you on that famous beach of Ipanema. Yeah, nice smile.
I don't give a fuck.
And tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking and passes goes ah. When she walks, she's like a samba that swings so cool and sways so gently that when she passes, each one she passes goes
ah. We'll be back with a very, very interesting and controversial show, I promise you. So don't go away. But first we pause for this message. Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine. Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Lisbon, Antigua was a big hit back in the 50s by Nelson Riddle. On today's show, we're talking about a long time ago in Portugal, and we're talking about not a major city, but the tiny village of Fátima. And we're not talking about the 1950s, we're talking about 1917. On the line from Portugal, we have Joaquin Fernandez and Fina da Mata. They have two books out. With the addition of the third book, it'll be a trilogy. These books are about what happened in Fátima, Heavenly Lights, and the second book was called Celestial Secrets. That second book was translated into English by Alexandra Bruce, who is also on the line with us. She's in New York. Summer is almost over here in the U.S., but it's still warm. I wonder what the weather's like in Portugal. Alexandra, let's go ahead and get the show underway. I guess, first of all, we can say hello to our guest and find out what the weather is like in Portugal.
Alô, Joaquim, Fina.
Como
é que está indo? I live in the north of Portugal, and it tends to be
cloudy. Um pouquinho.
Yeah, it's sort of a foggy part of the country. Very beautiful, actually.
Uma tarde soleira.
Let's ask our guest, first of all, what got their attention? Why were they interested in this subject?
O Jerry quer saber de vocês por que vocês começaram essa investigação?
Em Portugal aconteceu uma revolução em 1974.
Her response was that in 1974 there was a revolution in Portugal where censorship was eradicated. And Joaquim Fernandez, who is a professor, a historian at the University of João Pessoa in Porto.
Fernando Pessoa,
sorry, oh yeah, there's a city in Brazil with the other name. Invited her, who I guess had been doing some work on her own studying this, to join forces with him and investigate the story, which is a huge legend and a huge industry in the country of Portugal. I mean, it's an industry. It's one of the largest industries of that country, practically. But they wanted to investigate it from a very dry academic and historical angle. And now that there was no longer any censorship, and there was the time was ripe for them to approach the sanctuary and request access to the documents and to take a look at the real historical facts surrounding, you know, the 6 months of weird events that occurred during 1917.
Okay, we're all familiar with the Fatima story, more or less. However, Alexandra, I'd like to ask them if it's okay about the paperwork, about the material. Where did they get to see this material? Was it kept by the Catholic Church, or what?
Ele quer saber se vocês receberam qualquer resistência.
Okay. Her answer is that she had a scholarship from a university and was given access to documents freely from the Fatima Sanctuary, except for that she had to notify what, notify them what documents she was perusing and what she would write. They would have a right to look over her analyses of, but that, as far as gaining access, there didn't seem to be any, that was not a challenge. It was just that they had to have the right to.
In other words, they had to approve the final product. And, that leads me to the subject of the unusual angle, I think, of this book, or these series of books, and that's, there's a UFO connection, right?
Well, there is, whatever the UFO connection is, and this is a point that they, I think in the first book, they might have stressed the similarity between the cluster of phenomena that occurred in the Fatima apparitions over the course of 6 months, and the many, many eyewitness testimonials of UFO sightings and abductee reports. You know, there are many, many similarities to the Fatima events and the UFO and abduction phenomena that occurred later in the century, and the first book pointed out those many similarities. Now, as to defining exactly what the UFO phenomena is or are, you know, that is maybe beyond the ken of our current 3D human rational thinking, and to jump to a conclusion that it's evil aliens, deceitful, manipulative aliens or whatever is maybe just the way we, in our current human development, might interpret those events, but maybe 1,000 years from now we'll understand what it all meant. You know what I mean? But certainly that it was Our Lady.
Yeah, what I was getting at.
Definitely is definitely in question. That's for sure.
Yeah. What I was getting at is how did they come up with the similarity? How did you come up with the similarity?
The many different. Well, they witnessed the falling leaf sort of phenomena of the miracle of the sun, the end of the apparitions, where there were like 30,000 plus witnesses. There was a disc that started out silver and became transparent, and they could see three beings inside this disc-shaped object, and certainly that would seem to be very UFO-like, you know, but what the hell are we really talking about here? And there are other events that the children reported of when they saw the Virgin hanging over the tree, or when they saw an angelic being suspended over a tree, looked like a holographic projection from potentially a ship above the cloud level. The ceiling was very low, and they could not see where the beam was being projected from, but it looked like when the image disappeared, it looked like a ray was being shut off that came from above the clouds. And other phenomena, such as being paralyzed,
I understand.
Drink by the entities. I think the children, one of them was given something to drink. Many of these different phenomena or activities or symptoms sound like the many, many, many UFO and abduction reports over the 20th century. So
no, when the authors came up, and let's ask them this about this, when in Heavenly Lights, when they came up with this similarity, or alluding to the similarity of UFO legends, what kind of reaction did they get? A, from the officials, and B, from the public, there in Portugal.
o fenômeno de OVNI e o fenômeno...
Oh, okay. Essentially, what he's saying is that the Catholic Church, as far as the higher hierarchy, ignored it completely. He's saying that middle-level clerics in Portugal wrote a few articles about it, of course expressing shock and, you know, disavowing anything that they said, because of course it doesn't fit within the tenets of the faith of, you know, the Catholic faith, and that essentially the public reaction depended very much on their own cognitive psychology, on their own belief systems. So if they were hardcore Catholics, they were upset, they thought it was blasphemy, you know, or if they were UFO believers, you know, then they thought this is it, this is perfect, you know. So it was across the board. Now, Fina is saying that she was on the street a couple of times and threatened, and that in one incident she had to actually flee. She had to jump into a truck and you know, be driven away quicker. She angered a person, obviously, who was very hardcore Catholic faith and who was angry at their book.
Like, I'm your nephew.
Wow.
Well, to follow up on that,
did it impact their careers?
Muy interesante. Okay, a very interesting thing to point out is that, which I had forgotten to mention in the last answer, was that the Catholic Church itself and the sanctuary that holds that where these documents, these Fatima documents, are stored, had never bothered to really study them in depth themselves, and that these people were the first people to ever do so. She had a scholarship to study history, basically, to study the history of women in the early part of the century, because in the early part of the century, there was a revolution where the first republic was founded in Portugal, where there was a separation of church and state, and many of the clerics were forced to flee the country. It was a very anti-Catholic kind of, it was pro-Republican, meaning separation of church and state, and trying to enter the modern era of separating church and state. So she was studying the history of women during that period of time, and it was actually because of it, that it all coincided with the apparitions, the era of the apparitions, that she was able to gain access to these documents, because she says that not even bishops or anyone had ever previously had access to these documents before. And it was because she had a scholarship to study women in that era of Portuguese history that she was gained access to those documents. And as a result of her scholarship was rescinded, and basically she was blackballed as a investigator or journalist, or, you know, was never able to get another, you know, scholarship to go to school again.
Are either of the authors Catholic?
Ele quer saber se vocês, alguém, algum de vocês são católicos.
Foi católica, não é?
Tanto, somos batizados.
Batizados, católicos.
Casamos. Okay, this is a very interesting answer. They said, yeah, but certainly their background, they were baptized, they got their first communion, they baptized their children, they are culturally Catholic, in a culturally Catholic, you know, nation.
Mm-hmm.
But science is science, and they're scientists, and it may say that many other scientists are Catholic too.
É preciso lembrar a todos os crentes que Fátima nem sequer é um artigo de fé, né? É uma questão de fé que imponha qualquer dogma, qualquer obrigação aos próprios católicos. Portanto, é um território aberto à investigação. Deve ser um território aberto à investigação.
Yeah, he believes that the events of Fátima should not be an article of faith, but should be a subject of, you know, academic and scientific investigation.
When they started studying this, what conclusion did they draw about the events of Fatima? What happened there exactly, and why?
There's actually some interesting details in the second book that are very interesting, but I'm going to ask him this question anyway. Quer saber qual foi a sua conclusão inicial no seu primeiro livro ao que se ocorreu na Fátima com essas aparições.
Em relação ao primeiro levantamento de
nomes, what he's saying is that, yes, the first book concludes that the body of evidence and phenomena of what was reported about the Fatima events by the witnesses, the eyewitnesses there, and the thousands of reports of UFO and abductions that occurred later in the century show at least 15 points of similarity in terms of psychological, physical evidence, you know, factors that show that there is an absolutely a relationship between the two phenomena, between the UFO phenomena and the apparitions of Fatima, but that the interpretation of what those things are remains, you know, just to say that it's a UFO thing implies, of course, a whole other set of beliefs, and everyone, you know, can't forget that either, because some people, we did an interview with Linda Moulton Howe, and she was very insistent on her own belief system, which is that, based on her own relationship with, close relationship with high-level military people who have confided in her, that their belief, or whatever they were telling her, is that the alien and UFO phenomenon, quote-unquote, has been here forever. It consists of extremely deceitful beings who will mimic Catholic imagery to manipulate people, and, you know, it's extremely deceitful and manipulative aliens. But the authors themselves are not saying that. They say that for thousands of years there have been interdimensional phenomena occurring in that part of Portugal since prehistoric times, you know, that there have been cults and visions and things reported that have changed name and nomenclature depending on the belief systems of the witnesses. And so when you say that there's a correspondence between the apparitions of Fatima and the UFO phenomenon, you have to keep in mind that, okay, what is the UFO phenomenon? Because that represents a whole other cluster of beliefs depending on who you are.
Okay, I know Linda Moulton Howe, and I like her very well, and we visit quite a lot. But I have no definite belief. Even though I've been doing UFO shows as long as you have lived.
Me too. I've had over 20 UFO sightings throughout my life, and I, for the life of me, know less about it now than I ever did.
Now, how do the authors feel? Do they think this might be extraterrestrial, interdimensional, or a combination of all of this, or something we just don't understand?
I think probably all of the above. Mm-hmm. You know, something we can't really wrap our heads around. Certainly within the paradigm of, you know, rational, 3D, logical reason, it cannot be pinned down by those means. It can only the facts can be noted, and that's really what the book is. It's not propagating a belief system of any kind. The first book is the first book to really clearly lay out in a very dry and academic manner the homology, the similarity between these two sets of phenomena, the apparitions of Fatima and the UFO phenomena.
Now, I'm going to talk to you about celestial secrets in a moment because you translated that, but you mentioned your UFO sightings, Alexandra, and we'll have to follow that up sometime.
Okay.
Because I'm very interested in that. Obviously, you're interested in this subject. And in addition to this, what was your opinion when you got this book, Celestial Secrets, to translate? I mean, did you have already a clue about what it was about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I had read Jim Marr's Alien Agenda, where he, I think, references the book, and he actually did the foreword for the book that I translated of theirs, the second book.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, through other sources, because I've been studying the UFO phenomenon practically my whole life, because I've been seeing UFOs my whole life,
and I don't call myself an abductee. I don't consider myself an abductee. Everything I've seen every shape, size, and kind of moving object you can think of. It's not like the same thing. It's like, you know, hounding me. I don't know why I see stuff, but 98% of the time I am accompanied by other people and they see the same thing that I'm seeing.
So at least
the laws of physics, I've seen things that are so huge and big and hovering over a city of 20 million people and not front page news or on the TV the next day, and realized that the laws of physics were being broken that I was being taught in school, and that it wasn't considered to be front page news or any news whatsoever. And I realized at the age of 13 that we're living in a world of lies. Complete, utter lies. That's what I got.
Yeah, well, I understand. And we'll follow that up a little bit more, because there are a lot of sightings in Manhattan, New York, Long Island.
Most of them were in Manhattan, and most of them were over the World Trade Center, where I live 500 feet away from.
It's
like a vortex, that area. And, I mean, it certainly was a vortex that changed the world quite a bit.
Yeah. When we talked to the authors here, were there any abduction scenarios in the Fatima events?
Sintomas de abdução, do fenômeno de abduction que se ocorreu nas ocorrências de Fatima, porque, por exemplo...
Como deve recordar-te, Xander, neste segundo livro...
He's saying that, among many phenomena that occurred during the Fatima, the many, many different Fatima events that occurred over a six-month period, were cases of, the buzzing in your head, being paralyzed, hearing voices, and visions. You know, you hear a lot of stories of the Greys showing the abductee screens with visions of an apocalyptic future. Lucia received something like that. And, many, many other sort of correspondences between her experience and what she originally testified, and, you know, what they found in these documents, which would really never been looked at by the Catholic Church, and the classic abduction scenario.
It's
important also to note that they make a distinction between Fatima I, which is what they discovered in the sanctuary documents, which was the testimony immediately following the events, okay, in 1917 and 1918, the various people involved, and that was the three children, the prelate of the area who interviewed them, and his reports of his interviews with the children, and interviews with family members of the children and friends of the children and other witnesses, and what they reported. Those were all stored in the sanctuary and had really never been reviewed by anyone prior to these historians' investigation.
We are talking with Joaquin Fernandez and Vina D'Amato. They have written a trilogy on the Fatima incident in Portugal. The name of the first book in the series was Heavenly Lights, The Apparitions of Fatima and the UFO Phenomenon. The second book is Celestial Secrets, The Hidden History of the Fatima Cover-Up. And the translator for that book is with us from New York, Alexandra Bruce. When we come back for the next segment, we're going to get into the research done by these two researchers in Portugal. I think that you'll find what we talk about will be definitely fascinating. I'm Jerry Pippin, and you're listening to the UFO Files.
Do you have a problem with mold or mildew in your home? Well, listen to this. We have found a product you will love. Moldzyme, an effective non-toxic mold and mildew cleaner. Moldzyme is the cleaner, greener way to remove mold and mildew stains. This is a line of completely non-hazardous, non-toxic, and environmentally safe products that gets rid of mold and mildew stains quickly, easily, and safely. Moldzyme contains no chlorine or ammonia, is non-hazardous and hypoallergenic, Safe on wood, concrete, and brick, inside or outside your home. Molzheim eliminates odors and is fragrance-free, an all-natural and environmentally safe way to remove mold and mildew stains that really work. See the complete line of products by clicking on one of the Molzheim banners located throughout our website. You'll be glad you did.
Random House Audio presents The Third Secret by Steve Berry. Read for you by L.J. Ganser. Fatima, Portugal, July 13, 1917. Lucia stared toward heaven and watched the lady descend. The apparition came from the east, as it had twice before, emerging as a sparkling dot from deep within the cloudy sky. The lady stood upright, her crystallized image clothed in a glow that seemed more brilliant than the sun. Lucia lowered her eyes in response to the dazzling beauty. A crowd surrounded Lucia, unlike the first time the lady appeared 2 months before. Then it had been only Lucia, Jacinta, and Francisco in the fields, tending the family sheep. Lucia stared hard at the lady. The form was transparent, in varied hues of yellow, white, and blue. The face was beautiful, but strangely shaded in sorrow. The lady opened her clasped hands and spread her arms. A penetrating radiance poured forth and bathed Lucia in a warmth, much like that of a winter's sun on a cool day. She embraced the feeling, then saw that the radiance did not stop at her and her two cousins. Instead, it passed through the earth, and the ground opened. A sea of fire spread before her in a magnificent vision. Within the flames, blackened forms appeared, like chunks of beef swirling in a boiling soup. They were human in shape, though no features or faces were distinguishable. They popped from the fire, then quickly descended, their bobbing accompanied by shrieks and groans so sorrowful that a shudder of fear crept down Lucia's spine.
The Miracle of Fatima. Religious miracle or something from another time or another world. Hello, this is Jerry Pippin, and welcome back to the show. On the line from Portugal, we have Joaquin Fernandez and also Fina D'Amata. They have written the Fatima Trilogy. One of those books is The Celestial Secrets, The Hidden History of the Fatima Cover-Up. Alexandra Bruce was the translator for that book here in America, and she is on the line from her home near the beach on Long Island in New York. Alexandra is also the interpreter for today's show. All three of you, welcome back to the show.
When we talk about this event, why did it stop after 6 months? I mean, did it just all of a sudden come to a halt?
Ele está querendo saber por que que parou. Simplesmente parou depois de 6 meses.
Parou as aparições.
Ah, porque foram 6 meses. Foram 6 meses. Sempre à mesma hora, e que ia acabar no 13 de outubro.
Ok. Actually, the apparition herself said that she would always appear on the 13th of the month at the same time of day, which is actually a numerological challenge when you consider that the months had different amounts of days in them. So the Fina likes to point out that it's also a numerological phenomenon, because to appear on the 13th of every month was also a feat in itself, because the months had different amounts of days in them. And the apparition herself said, I will appear at X time every day on the 13th of every month for 6 months, and then it will stop. And she says that this apparition very much
corresponds with a Roman and Greek and also ancient. Who were colonies of these bigger empires previously, of the cult of Persephone, where she comes to, I guess Hera would be her mother, I don't know, it's Ceres in Greek, in Roman, the goddess of the earth, you know, who has to do with the crops and everything like that during the summertime, and the deal with whatever the other god's name is, where she has to go to hell for the winter months, and it's part of an ancient Greek myth. It's 6 months here, and, you know, 6 months on earth with her mom, growing crops, 6 months in hell with her husband, the devil, or whoever he is. I'm forgetting the names of these Greek gods, but you can look them up. You know, Greek and Roman. I mean, this is really old stuff. You know, remember Persephone ate the four pomegranates and whatever, pomegranate seeds. I'm not very great at that stuff, but...
Well, you're doing fine.
And then actually, so that's what it was. It very much corresponds.
So this happened...
Ancient Greek mythological stuff.
Yeah, so...
Start labeling it UFO again. Is this almost like, you know, it's imposing a 20th century read on something that's interdimensional and millennial, because people had been having sightings of goddesses.
So basically it started in the spring and went through the summer and stopped in the fall.
Yep, it stopped in October 13th, and she said that's when it would stop. And it started in, I think it was either May or June, whatever, 6 months.
What time of the day? Always the same?
Meio-dia solar, e tudo tinha a ver.
Okay, this is very interesting. She says that she always appeared at noon, at midday, that she was a being of light, and that, of course, the name, the Roman name of Portugal was Lusitania, which means land of light, and that it all, you know, it's all kind of one meaningful sort of system of synchronicities here.
Now, in their research, they mentioned three beings, perhaps, being seen in some object that might have been a UFO. Were these beings different than the image of Mary?
Okay, that's a very good question. O Jerica saber se os seres, os entes que foram observados pelas pessoas naquele disco voador que vocês descreveram que começou dois a uma, então foram dois a
All right,
well, the thing is, the three beings that were seen within this discoid-shaped object that went turned from a silver disc into a transparent disc. Three beings were seen inside this transparent disc, and actually one of them put his hand out, which was these beings were interpreted the only way that was possible for Portuguese peasants to interpret anything that was as strange and miraculous and is what they were seeing, which was they were seeing Saint Joseph, Mother Mary, and baby Jesus, and that the baby Jesus, holding his hand up, was blessing the crowd. That is how they were interpreted and seen by the masses, because that is the only paradigm they could work within.
So they were humanoid.
They were humanoid, yeah, and one was perceived as female and two males.
And now, when we talk about this, I mean, this is almost 100 years ago.
Yes.
Anything like this ever happened since? In other words, has there been anything similar to this reported in Portugal at all?
O Jerry quer saber se houve...
Nem no mundo.
Nem no mundo, okay. She's saying not even anywhere. Something like this.
Plano foi cumprido.
This was a planned thing. It happened at noon on the 13th of every month for 6 months. Nothing like this has ever happened since in Portugal or anywhere else on Earth, as far as, you know, that's been recorded. So.
And it's a mystery to all of us on why it happened.
I mean, is there a message here? Was it a religious message?
Ele quer saber se é mistério absoluto ou se tem uma mensagem. Que vocês,
eu acho que tem mensagem. She's saying that, first of all, you have to understand that the messages were given only to one person, and it was a 14-year-old girl who was illiterate because there were no school. Girls were not, especially peasant girls, were not going. There were no schools for girls in Portugal at that time for the peasant class, certainly, and that the message, the primary message, that Lúcia received and interpreted and gave to the prelates and to the other priests and et cetera who interviewed her afterwards was that the woman was telling her to read and to learn, and that it was a shame that girls didn't have access to education in Portugal.
So basically it was a message given to one person who was illiterate, female, not getting a chance to have an education because of so it's an equal message. I mean, equal opportunity type message.
As I said, it sounds like, was it like a feminist message? Because, you know, what is this? And she sort of giggled and she just said, "E que mais, Fina?"
Portanto, há o círculo que é curioso, ou seja, o terço.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to get into that also, right. But this is where I start to sort of get in over my head, because I was not raised Catholic and I don't know too much about the rosary, but much of what the being referred to Lúcia, had to do with the rosary and with a certain part of it. The rosary is a large chain of beads,
yes,
you know, uh-huh. Each ball represents another prayer, and it's like a, you know.
And what part of the rosary are we talking about?
It's called the third in Portuguese, and I don't really know what that means.
Well, we'll try to find out.
It means the third. So there's a segment. Okay, and this is very important, because she says that there is a segment of the rosary that actually is a molecular replica of the female chromosome, and much also of what the being was telling Lúcia had to do with roses and a circle of roses. I don't know if I'm translating this correctly. Basically, it was a feminist messenger. Certainly, that is Fina's interpretation of the events, is that it was something of a feminist message.
You know, Alexandra, I'm not Catholic either. Maybe we could ask them this may sound like a silly question, but a lot of us probably don't know. What's the origination of the rosary? How did that get started?
Isso na sua religião, porque a gente não entendeu bem. Olha, o terço dizem que surgiu no século XII, e curiosamente foi um ser de fora, uma Nossa Senhora, que apareceu a São Domingos. O São Domingos foi que depois gerou os dominicanos.
This is very interesting stuff for people who don't know about the history of the Catholic Church and the various saints and the histories of the saints and how so much of European history is driven by the history of the Church. And so I'm going to relay to you the origin of the rosary was, again, an apparition of Saint Mary to the man who eventually became canonized as Saint Dominic, who was a Castilian nobleman priest to whom the Virgin Mary supposedly appeared and revealed the mystery of the rosary, which is a beaded necklace that is structured in such a way that you can put your fingers over it and know which prayer to say. It's a set of Hail Marys and then a couple of Our Fathers and then more Hail Marys, and that's what the structure of the beads are, and instruct you and remind you which prayer to say as you go. And I also wanted to mention that Saint Dominic, in the history of the Church, was associated with the Inquisitions against heresies And he's the saint who protects against heresy.
Well, that answers that question. I have another couple of questions about the Catholic faith. But first, let's pause so I can talk about Bose, one of our sponsors. Don't go away. We're all familiar with the famous Bose name when it comes to great sound. And now, Bose has made it possible to enjoy your iPod music and programs in the fullest possible fidelity. Just slip in the iPod into the docking cradle, and instantly you will have the famous Bose sound system playing your downloaded digital audio. By the way, the iPod charges as it plays on the Bose machines, so you always have the programming without interruption. Bose gives your programs from the internet vitality and realism, a full, rich sound. The Bose sound dock requires no adapters or wires. All you do is use one of the specifically designed iPod models. We have a banner on this page where you can click and go over and read about the Bose sound dock machine and the iPod. In fact, you can order it right here, right now, or in the future at your convenience. Bose and iPod, a marriage made in audio heaven. Welcome back to the show. And on the line from Portugal, we have Joaquim Fernandes and Fina da Mata. They're the authors of a Fatima trilogy. The first two books are out. One is called Celestial Secrets, The Hidden History of the Fatima Cover-Up. And the translator for that book, Alexander Bruce, is our interpreter today. She's on the line from her home on Long Island in New York. The first book in the series was called Heavenly Lights, The Apparitions of Fatima and the UFO Phenomenon. All three of these books are available from our shopping site. If you'd like to order them, just simply click on the link on this page. Hey, let's get back to the program. And before the break, we were talking about the Catholic Church.
When we talk about the Catholic Church here, and you have to when you talk about this incident, you may have heard this, Alexandra, since you've been following UFO stories, but many researchers tell me the Vatican has a huge library of UFO material. Do the authors know anything about that?
I will ask them. I've heard something to that effect, and I've even read quotes from certain Vatican members who would like to release that information, but I can't recall the exact names and the quotes, but
they
probably know more about this, and I'll ask them. O que o Jerry está querendo saber é se vocês estão por dentro ou sabem mais sobre essa... You know, intellectual circles in the Jesuit community, there's absolutely no evasion to try to deny that they're very upfront and honest about their preoccupation with the UFO phenomenon, and that they make no bones about their interest in studying this and how it may impact human civilization. And in fact, the Catholic Church owns a big observatory in the Arizona desert and has their own, you know, observatory and makes their own observations. I'll get the name of it again in a second. And furthermore, that there is a Vatican spokesperson who appears routinely on television discussing the UFO phenomenon as real, as a potential extraterrestrial phenomenon.
Yeah, I knew that because of...
Conrado o quê?
Balducci.
Conrad Balducci.
Yeah. Paula Harris, who does some things for us, she has mentioned to him before, and it is interesting about the history of the Catholic Church and UFOs.
See, the thing is that the Catholic Church is a huge community, and actually there is a branch of it that's very intellectual and very scientific. And
sure, they have all kinds of universities and the university system, so. And I imagine it's even more ingrained in Europe than it is here.
Yeah, I would think so. I know a lot of kids in Europe who went to Jesuit boarding schools. Actually, no, I know a kid here who went to a Jesuit community college. I mean, there's a lot of Catholics in America.
Sure, sure. We're going to have to wrap this up here pretty soon, but I want to talk about heavenly lights for a minute.
I'm going to tell you what I think the most salient and interesting part of this story that didn't get to be told, I don't think, in the previous book, is that several months before the apparitions occurred, there were certain psychic communities, because as you may know, like Theosophy and Madame Blavatsky and, you know, seances and, you know, spiritualism and was sort of a fad in the earlier part of the 20th century. And there were many circles in Portugal of people who would get together and have seances and things like that. And so several months before the apparitions actually took place, two or three of these groups put in the personal section, in the back of the paper, the Fatima apparitions were placed in a personals ad at the back of a Lisbon newspaper, Lisbon being the largest city in Portugal, 64 days before the first apparition took place. The message in the personals ad said that something very important would take place on May 13th. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then, on the morning of May 13th, in three separate Porto papers, which is the second city in Portugal and closer to where the events took place, there were three personal ads in three separate newspapers that said something very big was going to happen on that day. And these ads were all placed by different spiritualist groups who had been in contact with interdimensional spirits that told them to watch out for something major to occur on the 13th of May.
Is there any evidence at all that these events could have been fraudulent? They didn't happen.
I really doubt it, because you're talking about, I think, a minimum of 30,000 witnesses.
But how did they talk to just the one little girl if there were 30,000 people there?
They put announcements saying that something very big was about to happen, and predicted, I believe, the actual date of, you know, June 13th as being the date. But let me just get that 100% clear from these guys. Hold on. Eu queria falar um pouquinho mais sobre aquela que
diziam os espíritos,
as aparições, quantos meses vinha
a procurar. É impossível recusar a existência de jornais impressos na época, não é? Que dizem claramente que 64 dias depois vai acontecer um evento em 13 de maio.
Okay, so they're saying no. I mean, fraud, as you're suggesting, I mean, these, you know, there was an ad placed in a Lisbon newspaper 64 days in advance of the first event that from a spiritualist group that had nothing to do with a peasant sheep herding little girl 100 miles away. Okay? And they predicted that something big was going to happen on May 13th. And then as far as fraud, I mean, yeah, I'd say that probably if there's any fraud in the story, it's what the Jesuits turned the story into. You know, this is where they make the distinction between Fatima 1, which is what they discovered in the actual documents at the sanctuary, where the children and the families and the witnesses at that time in the 1917 and 1918 were interviewed by the prelates and the bishops. That's Fatima 1, where, you know, she's wearing stuff that Mother Mary would never wear, like she's got a mini skirt on. I mean, it's all very, very strange. If you read the book, it's not how the Virgin, you know, appears in normal Catholic iconography, okay? And then there's Fatima 2, which is the story that's come down to us over the succeeding decades, which is a story that was essentially made up by the Jesuit branch of the Catholic Church as propaganda for the Catholic Church. I mean, one of the big things that they were trying to do was to quote-unquote consecrate Russia to the Catholic or to the Christian faith, And that was supposed to be one of the predictions of the Fatima apparitions, and it could be argued that the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of the Soviet Union is a fulfillment of that prophecy, because now people in Russia are free to practice Christianity again, where they were not under the Soviet regime. And so the Jesuits chalked this up as a success of their propaganda movement. And the other one is the prediction that the Pope would be assassinated, which, you know, the actual language of the prediction was that a bishop in white would be murdered. But, a bishop in white is not exactly the Pope, but could be construed to be the Pope. And indeed, there was an assassination attempt on Pope John II. And, in fact, a year before her death, which was last year, and which, incidentally, was one day before I finished translating this book, which was very eerie. And I had a very eerie experience where I had a flashback of her entire life and how her cloistered life, where she had been gagged in a Carmelite nunnery, or one of these places where you have to take a vow of silence and you're never allowed to speak again, and which she was forced to do. But Pope John Paul made a big deal out of propagating that Fatima prediction that the attempt on his life had been predicted by Our Lady. The third secret has never been revealed.
Does anyone have a clue what this third secret might be?
I think that they do have a clue, but I think that
it's kind of
funny the way they leave it in their book. Elika saber qualquer terceiro segredo.
Os mais sábios deste mundo, se tivéssemos a chave completa.
Olha, uma coisa é verdade, é que não é o Papa.
Yeah,
isso realmente não aconteceu.
Não foi o Papa, yeah. In her prediction about the bishop in white, it was in an apocalyptic scenario, a ruined country, of mountainous land. And this, of course, was not the case in the assassination attempt on Pope John Paul. I mean, he was in the middle of St. Peter's Square and in Rome, which was hardly a city in ruins at the time. So as far as that, manipulation of what she, what the predictions were, and if that's the second one, then it hasn't, then that one, whatever that prediction, the second one, it hasn't come to pass yet. And as far as the third one, I think they might have a gag order on that one, frankly.
Ask them.
They are very funny about the third or final secret. Number one and number two of the second secret, and then there's the third secret that they won't even talk about.
Who would issue a gag order?
Ele está querendo saber porque me parece que vocês não têm a liberdade de discutir o terceiro segredo. E se vocês têm alguma pressão em cima de vocês de não... Não discutir.
Os textos de 1917 relativos ao segredo ou às partes do segredo.
Que era só umas palavrinhas, que 1917 eram umas palavrinhas e que a Lúcia em 1942 multiplicou em 3.
Mas para não falar ou revelar o terceiro segredo.
It's quiet.
Yeah. They're just saying that what they've noted is the difference between the actual language of the predictions and how, in the original interviews that exist in the documents of the sanctuary from the 1917 and 1918, and how they came down the pike in the history of the church during the 20th century as a prediction of the consecration of Russia to Christianity and an attempt on the life of the Pope. And when I asked them if there has been any pressure put on them by an entity or group or individual or anybody about discussing or revealing the third secret, you heard the biggest silence so far.
They're not going to talk.
No.
What about the third book?
O que se trata?
Foi abaixo a chamada, nós...
Coisa de não falar ou revelar... a terceira, o terceiro segredo.
Não, não, não.
Não.
Da minha parte, nunca.
Não, não, não.
No, they're saying no, that they have never experienced
anything. Não, porque eles viraram aquilo para o Vaticano, acham que, claro. Ora, vamos lá ver, se eles consideram que as atenções são de Nossa Senhora, o segredo só tem...
Pois é, de não falar ou revelar a terceira. The Vatican is unfazed, essentially, by their work. And as I said, there are even members of the Vatican that are very actively and openly discussing the UFO phenomenon on television, and that there was no, that they have not suffered any undue pressure to not discuss the third secret, that they've already pointed out the differences between the real testimonies and what has come down as being the secrets of Fatima, and it's really like not, you know, there are many inconsistencies and it's just yet another inconsistency that exists within, you know, Catholicism, period. I mean, it's, the faith is full of factual, you know, inconsistencies. So it's really not hard to lose faith when your faith is based on factual inconsistencies.
The first book was Heavenly Light, second book Celestial Secrets. They have a name for the third book?
Yeah, ele queria saber mais sobre o terceiro livro e qual que é o título e de que se trata.
O título é Fátima Revisitada. Aliás, é o título original em inglês.
Okay, so it'd be Fatima Revisited.
As aparições no mito, na religião e na ciência, e versado para inglês para ser publicado.
Tá bom. Okay, whereas the first book is drawing the many similarities between the Fatima apparitions and the UFO phenomenon, the book that I translated is a very rigorous historical study of the apparitions that have been taking place in that region for millennia prior to Fatima, and also the real history behind the evolution of what actually happened and the myth of the Fatima apparitions as they currently are set in Catholic dogma, which they say was a complete Jesuit concoction. The third book is called Fatima Revisited, and it's already been translated. I don't think it's published yet. And it is, the Portuguese title is actually Fatima and Science, and it's an interdisciplinary work with many scientific colleagues from many fields in Europe and the United States. And it is Fatima within the larger context of all of these altered state-type experiences, Marian apparitions, out-of-body experiences, what are they called? What is it? When people die, the Elizabeth...
Near-death experience.
When people die and they come back to life.
Reincarnation.
No. That thing when you see all kinds of stuff and then you come back, that phenomenon.
Okay, after-death experience.
Yeah, near-death experience.
Yeah.
And that whole cluster of I would call that, and many in the New Age world call that, like, the fourth dimension or fourth density type imaginal realm was a term that Professor, PhD John Mack from Harvard used, the imaginal realm experiences, and he was actually working on communicating with the dead when he himself was struck and killed by a drunk driver in London last year. And he actually had joked a week prior to his death with his colleagues. I was actually friends with him and his colleagues about how he thought he could probably get some more work done from the other side than from this side. And about a week later, he was killed, which is interesting. So the next Fatima book is translated in English and ready to be published. And it's exploring Fatima within the larger context of these imaginal realm experiences, and not really propounding a very narrow ufological interpretation of these events.
Well, we look forward to that, and tell them thank you for an interesting discussion. Our interpreter was Alexander Bruce, and on the line from Portugal we have Pina D'Amato and Joaquin Hernandez. It's been an interesting show for sure. We'll let them say their goodbyes as we close the show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Okay, thank you all around.
This program was edited by Jane Swartley. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.